What a beautiful picture. For me, it's the ideal picture, and it's in Psalm 133. It is amazing just to get your head around this and to put yourself alongside David on top of his penthouse, whatever, in Jerusalem, on the roof. And three times a year, the tribes come up to worship him. What a sight. What an absolute sight. Coming from the north and coming from the south and the east and the west. And David, his heart is just absolutely overwhelmingly just pouring out and how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together and sisters in unity. It's like the precious oil upon the head. It flows down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard. I don't know why Aaron had to come into that. Even like he doesn't normally get anointed, but even on his beard he'll get it. Coming down from the edge of his robes, priestly, of course. And it's like the dew of Hermon coming down upon the mountains of Zion. And there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. I think there are two sources to that picture and that psalm. And it's David's heart. And as he looks out over those tribes coming in, looking at the leaders and looking at the people, I think he's looking from two hearts. David is known as the shepherd king, but David was also leader king. He had two hearts, which is something of the premise I want to talk about for a few minutes, the heart of a pastor that carries two hearts. The heart of a shepherd and the heart of a leader. And his heart of a shepherd was just thrilled to see the masses of people that had come a long way in God and stuff like that. And they were loving God and loving each other. And they were faithful and loyal to their tribe, to their church. And here they are on the way to the sanctuary to worship together. Shepherd's heart. But then there was the leader's heart. I think he would look and he would see the leaders, these leaders, these key people, the leaders of the tribes. And he remembered the day when it wasn't quite so good for the leaders under the reign of Saul. But the leaders, does it give you a thrill when you see leaders in your church absolutely bouncing and prospering and fruitful? There's nothing like it. What of your people doing that? The priests and the Levites and the people in service. But David, I think he was so thrilled because he knew history. He knew it wasn't always like that. He remembered the day of disarray. And leadership was not as good as it ought to be under Saul. What a transformation he'd seen in them over the years as he worked with them, as he became senior pastor, if you like, of the church of the Old Testament. Thrilled to see good leadership at work. It's a thrill to see good shepherds doing their job, but it's equally a thrill to see good leaders doing the job. And I don't believe you can separate the two. If you separate the two, you've got leaders who go off and do their own thing and become their own self-made men or self-made women, and they just run their own show, and it's their show, and that's it. And people get burnt out, and people are trodden over, not deliberately, but it just happens, and the growth, and it takes some more new leaders, and they're put in, sucked in, and it goes on and on and on until you get stories, and you see people come into our churches, perhaps, or perhaps we've even done that, and now people are in other churches bruised and battered because of the way we overdid the leadership business. It's so important to be a shepherd. But a shepherd without a leader in him or her What have we got? Passivity. You are feeding people that are only in the barn. They're animals in your farmyard. Forgive me the analogy to that one. They're already there. All we're doing is turning in circles Sunday after Sunday. Shepherd my sheep. And I think David was the key pastor in the Old Testament because he took the model of Jesus. And you look at Jesus, shepherd and leader. It takes a shepherd to go through, work through Isaiah 53 and go to the cross and become man. It takes a shepherd to do that, to die for his people and die for his sheep. But it also takes a leader to take hold of 12 men and have them for 3 years. And you know, we've got to read our Bibles right. Jesus often left the crowds so that he could be with the leaders he was trained with. Time and time again he did that. And he trained up to 12. Took him 3 years. We think we're taking a long time sometimes, don't we? Took him 3 years and the end product wasn't that good anyway. Just before Pentecost, there's only one left. But it's the one that stuck that made the difference. And that 12 became 120. There was the Peter, James and John. Jesus spent time with, special time with them, and they got jealous of it. The other leaders got jealous of it. We've got to put up with it when we do this, you know. As leaders, as pastor leaders, when we invest time in our key leaders, you've got to put up with the criticism because the crowd, a part of the crowd, will complain. But Jesus did it. That's how his heart was. He was a shepherd and a leader as well. In fact, Hybels says this. It's such a clarity of way of saying things, isn't it? The future of the local church is directly tied to its ability to attract, resource, equip, unleash the potential of volunteers in the church. And unless we are deliberately each week with our diary putting aside time to do that, that won't happen. It doesn't happen just because somebody gets appointed in an AGM once a year to the role of Sunday school leader, a worship leader, or youth leader, or children's leader, or creche leader, or outreach leader. What we've got there is a contract that somebody said, I'll serve for a year. Not a lot will happen unless there's something special going on. You might just maintain the wheels if you like, as you go through that year. But if we take that group of people and make that marriage contract into a close relationship, then something surely will happen. And that's the key, I believe, to good shepherd leadership. So there was a story of two kings. We've got to go back into Chronicles, and I know I haven't got a lot of time. There is a story of two kings, isn't there? There was Saul, who did it the wrong way. He looked the part, he was anointed, he was commissioned of God. Yet the kingdom of God on his patch, on his watch, fell apart. His church fell apart. Ultimately, he lost the confidence of his key leaders one by one, and they faded into the background and dropped off his leadership team and his key ministries and his small group leaders, and suddenly there wasn't enough leaders. Now, it's not because you're doing the job wrong that there's not enough leaders, don't get me wrong. But sometimes there is a reason for it. And it's brutal to spell it out like that, isn't it? The Bible is brutal. It just tells the story as it was. And the litmus test of any work of the kingdom of God on our patch, on our watch, is our ability to gather and empower and hold on to good leaders, male and female. We won't hold on to them all, that's for sure. But a fair few of them should be sticking. To nurture them, cultivate them, grow them, shape them, and honour them. And I wonder if we're doing that. I wonder how well we are doing that. I often think too, and I often wonder, and I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but I suppose it comes to the stage, you're not getting paid for what you do, so you can virtually. But I will have a fee for today, by the way. There's a few hundred going. I'm joking, sorry. I often wonder, you know, how many, you know, these fantastic parachurch organisations that are out there. It's all survivors. Why, Mom, is it one? Oh, I'm an all absolutely fabulous. I wonder how many of those key leaders who are running their organisations are doing it by default. Because somewhere in the local church, when they were born again, there was something wrong with the way it was being led. Maybe it is of God and they go out and do their own thing, but there's something not working right, so they can't express themselves. There isn't a freedom, there isn't a nourishment, there isn't an honouring, there isn't expansive thinking, if you like, that allow them to flourish and grow in their ministries. I wonder. And I wonder how many are spin off in the meantime or will spin off in the future. Because we're really not always, maybe many times yes, but not always getting to grip with nourishing our leaders per se from the heart of a shepherd. And then there was David, of course. He was a slow starter. He wasn't an obvious choice. He became a leader of God's own heart. Yes, that's true. People loved him. His leaders came to him. They'd do anything for him. What's the difference? He became senior pastor after Saul and went on to build the church of God in the Old Testament. And that church is still prospering today through the New Testament on today. David, I started to put that together. There is a story of three ladies in Cheshire. Alderley Hedge. Edge. And if you've got a bit of brass around there, around here in the northwest, well, you hang out at coffee shops in Alderley Edge. I used to go through it a few times when we were in Frodsham. All the brass is down there, by the way. No, there is a bit around here as well. Everybody's gone quiet. So the three ladies having coffee, and they start to brag a little bit about how much their husbands are earning. And so one said, well, my husband, he earns $300,000 a year. And she said, what did he do? He's a consultant, all right. And the other said, well, mine's $500,000. What does he do? He's a barrister. The one in the corner said, well, my husband earns $1 million. So what do you do? She said, well, he's in sport and he's a fixer. He fixes football matches, horse racing. You know, the one thing about David, he knew how to fix it when he took over from Saul. Read about it in 1 Corinthians. We haven't really got time to go into it. I was going to do, but we haven't really got time to go into it. 1 Chronicles 12. In one chapter, the people are coming to him, those leaders, their leaders are coming to him bruised and battered and disillusioned and fed up and frustrated. And in one chapter, I know it was a period of time, but in one chapter at Hebron, David took them in, all of them, all the tribe leaders virtually. And there they were in this jolly cave, because David was on the run from a Saul who was blaming everybody else but himself for his failures. Yeah? We do that. Sometimes I hear it. Oh, if only my people were more committed. And I'm thinking, rubbish, I don't say it. It's not about the commitment of the people. It's about good leadership from a shepherd's heart that pours a life into the people and helps them flourish. Then they will come and turn up and find an avenue and a vehicle to drive and serve in church. And David knew how to fix it. I'm going to finish because I know time's gone and there's a lot of stuff. I already ditched about 10 pages of this. I don't know about you, but I always over-prepare. But 1 Chronicles 13, I'm going to finish with this, I think. And this is chapter 12, where, you know, the people of Issachar have come. And these are people of insight and understanding and know how to work things out mentally and stuff and all that. And they're all joining David. And then look at this in chapter 13, 1 Chronicles. Look at the language. David consulted with the captains of thousands, hundreds, and even every leader. And we don't consult every leader because they might not agree with what we want to do. Yeah? I've been there. Because you want to drive your thing through, don't you, at the end of the day? But David has such a close relationship and such a trust that started to build and grow in his leadership team that he could consult every leader. And David said, look at the language here. David said to all the assembly of Israel, if it seems good to you, have you heard this language before? Acts? Yeah? This is a model, isn't it? Really interesting. It's not happening in Acts. If it seems good to you, and if it is from the Lord our God, let us send everywhere to our kinsmen who remain in the land of Israel, also the priests, etc., etc., and let's bring back the ark. And within one chapter, certainly a period of time, but in one chapter, the glory of God, which had been exiled by poor, poor leadership, from definitely not a shepherd heart, they brought it back. And the glory that was in exile came back. And you know, churches turn around quickly, they do. I know it takes a long time and a lot of things. It's frustratingly slow. But they can turn around very, very quickly. And I think the challenge is, to us as senior pastors and senior leaders, what's our diary like next week? Dare you. I dare you to take 3 hours, half a day, and block it out and sit down with one of your leaders and give them that extra time. How are you doing? What's happening? Is it working all right at home? What are we doing in church that's blocking you? How can we release you more? I know we're not going to achieve everything you want to do, but come on. Let's have it coming out. Let's be listening. And I tell you, that person next week will put another 10% into what they're doing. If you keep that up with all your leaders, yes, all of them. And yes, you might not be able to go out and do that visiting. I know key visiting has got to be done, but set up a pastoral team. There's ways of doing that. People won't like it. People used to criticise me for it. But it works, folks. It's the Jesus model. You make sure the needy are taken care of. But Jesus, through that 3 years on earth, is again and again and again leaving the crowd, crossing time off, is in his diary, to have the chat with his disciples. I dare you. I'll tell you where I'm going to be. I'll finish now.
I'm on my rubbish. I've got something to read to you. Yeah, this is it.
I'm going to read you a poem. And this is a challenge. Where you're telling me it can't be done because the congregation won't take it and all the rest of it. Somebody will say we're feeling left out. We don't know the pastor anymore. Better get back to the mic. So here's your challenge. Somebody said that it couldn't be done, but he with a chuckle replied that maybe it couldn't, but he would be one who wouldn't say so till he tried. So he buckled right in with a trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. He started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done as he did it. Somebody scoffed, "Oh, you'll never do that." How often do we get that? "Oh, you'll never do that. At least no one has ever done it this way before in our church," and all the rest of it. At least no one has ever done it. But he took off his coat and he took off his hat, and the first thing he knew, he'd done it. He'd begun it. There are thousands to tell you it can't be done this way. There are thousands to tell it can't be done. There are thousands to prophesy failure. There are thousands to point out to you, one by one, the dangers that wait to assail you. But just buckle right in with a bit of a grin. Throw off your coat and go to it. Just start to sing as you tackle the thing that can't be done. And you'll do it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Let's just pray.